You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound, the sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett. I'm here with George Kurtz today for the next 2 hours, and happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. We're going to be on all day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's myself and George until 10. Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha will take over at 10 o'clock. They'll go to 12 with Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, and then we have Al Melchior doing Fan Rag Fantasy Baseball for an hour. And then we go over to the producers from 1 to 3. So happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. George, welcome to the show. And happy Mother's Day to you and yours, buddy.
Oh, thank you. You and yourself as well, Mike. Great day today, right? Mother's Day. Baseball celebrates it. It's always good to see. And I'll be heading out to my mom's almost immediately after the show.
Well, very nice. What do you have planned? Anything special? Is it a breakfast in-house or like kind of a brunch deal? Are you guys going out?
No, we'll be at my mom's house. It'll be lunch, dinner. We'll be there for quite a while.
Very nice. An all-day affair. Well, I can appreciate that. I am going with my wife and the two little ones. We're going to go out to lunch, maybe meet up with some people afterwards. But I got the plans, and hopefully everybody listening has got some nice plans. If you want to hit us up today, feel free. Do so on Twitter at Fantasy Sports Radio. That's at FNTSY Radio. And if you want to give us a call, you want to talk about Mother's Day and what you're going to be doing, that's fine with me. If you'd like to talk about Derek Jeter, since he will be so honored tonight, feel free to do that as well. 844-843-6879 is the number, 84-FNTSY. So we will talk about Jeter a little bit later, give you some thoughts on that, but to give you some major stories from last night. George, he's amongst the best players in baseball. Some might argue he's the best player, and he walked off the game last night. Bryce Harper hits a game-winning homer, walk-off homer, fifth of his career, second this season. And, you know, Bryce had a couple of bumps and bruises a week ago, but he's no worse for wear, second highest batting average in the majors.
Yeah, I think Bryce is okay. Signs the big arbitration deal yesterday, $21 million.
That's right.
Avoid a year of arbitration, $21 million plus, and then walks off. So, good for him. You know, good for Bryce Harper. He's healthy. I think ADP was around 9 going into the season. He's paying off in spades there. It looks great. Mm-hmm. He looks healthy. Looks like he's going to have a monster season again. Let's see what Bryce, just stay healthy. That whole Washington offense is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, Ryan Zimmerman leading the way with nearly a 400 batting average. I think you're right that Machado, Bryce Harper situation, I'm going to track it all year. I picked Machado over Bryce, and I almost regretted it as soon as I did it, and I certainly do now. Can't be regretful of having Manny Machado, but Bryce would be a nice alternative. You're right on that arbitration. Yeah, I think it makes everybody a little bit more comfortable, right? We all know what's coming down the pike at the end of 2018, but no arguments, no more discussions. Bryce is locked in. We don't have to deal with any arbitration, and everybody's effectively happy for another year and change, right?
Yeah, I think it's a smart move by Washington. Get that out of the way. Don't have to worry about dealing with all the negatives that come up with arbitration. Well, I guess it's one less headache.
Exactly right. So we'll talk about some of your fantasy headaches and try to soothe them. In the subsequent segments, we'll talk about who's hot, who's not a little bit later. It's Mike and George for the next 2 hours on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, going to get into it a little bit. We talked about Bryce Harper. He put on a nice show for his mom last night, but what I would say is that he actually got trumped regarding a Mother's Day celebration. Orioles rookie Francisco Pena, recently called up, I believe, promised his mom a homer when he got called up, George, and he hit two last night. So it's very Seinfeldian in that Paul O'Neill was asked to hit a homer by Kramer after sneaking into the clubhouse. Francisco Pena promises a homer, he hits two in the loss for the Orioles.
I think Mama Harper is just fine. I think she'll get over it.
She'll be all right.
I think she's okay. So I'm not worried about Mama Harper. Oh, great story by Pena that, hits two home runs for his mom. I mean, good for him. It's always good to hear stories like this.
Yeah, really cool. So
Beyond that, we'll get into the box scores a little bit later, but just to go over some of the major stories from last night. So Chris Sale, totally dominant yesterday, George. He gives up the 3 runs in 7 innings, but 12 Ks. He's as sharp as he could be. I think he's worth every penny that the Sox gave up for him in trade value. So and certainly Sale still at a very reasonable salary. That's the thing. That's one of the reasons why I thought it was such a huge trade for the Sox to pull off. You have Chris Sale at a bargain compared to some of the other top line pitchers, and Sale pitching like one of the Cy Young contenders this year.
Yeah, that's why he required so much in trade. You know, yeah. They got McCaw, they got Carl Kopech, they got a couple, they got a bunch of prospects because not only is he a great pitcher, Cy Young candidate pretty much year in and year out, but he's also, as far as salary is concerned, baseball salary is cheap. You know, he signed long-term for, with that's not breaking the bank. He's not going to cost you $25, $30 million a year like a David Price would or a Clayton Kershaw. So it's good on two fronts here. It's a trade that I think is very likely will work out for both teams because I think Moncada, Kopech, and maybe one of the other guys will pay off for the White Sox as well. So, hey, White Sox did what they had to do. They weren't going to win with Chris Sale. Maybe they'll win over the long-term with Moncada and Kopech.
Yeah, very possible. And I would say also in that game, Mookie Betts, who – look, he got off to a bumpy start. He was sick to start the season and got off to a little bit of a bumpy start, but he's on fire right now. Hits another homer yesterday. I think 3 more hits, 3 more RBIs for Betts. So they're doing okay in Boston. Got a couple of guys hitting real well, and obviously whatever the bumpy start was, I don't think it's really much of a big deal for them. They're going to be rolling right along here for a majority of the season, getting good pitching and good hitting yesterday, obviously.
No, I still think they're the best team in the American League. I still expect them to win that division. They're a team that has the least amount of problems. They do have problems. They're not a perfect team, but they have the least amount of problems. You know, assuming we think Toronto's done because of the slow start and Tampa never really had a chance. You know, we know Toronto and Baltimore and the Yankees both have the same problem, starting pitching. Boston has that as well, but they got Chris Sale. Neither the Yankees or Baltimore have that. And David Price will be back at some point. We don't know to what degree he'll be back. It may be the most curious thing we're waiting for, and he can be back by the end of the month, early June, to see what he brings to the table. But in my mind, Boston's still a team to beat in the American League East, if not the entire American League.
Yeah, sorry. He was 2-for-4, 2 runs scored, and 3 RBIs yesterday. So filled out your stat sheet. Beyond that, Jackie Bradley Jr., a couple of hits with a run scored for the Sox, hitting 192 there. It's rough. Kiermaier on the Tampa side of things. Kevin Kiermaier actually hit a home run. Raise your hand if you had that in DFS. And another guy, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I know Logan Morrison was expected to maybe have some power, but he's already a double-digit homers, George, and we're not even at the midway point of May. He goes 1-for-4 yesterday, another solo homer.
Yeah, raise your hand if you had that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's pretty amazing. In deep leagues, I could see a 10-12 team leagues. Nobody had Logan Morrison, not at the start of the season. Maybe you've picked him up since. As I said, I did not see that coming at all. I think a couple of those homers have come against the Yankees, for that matter. Hey, I mean, something needs to go right for Tampa Bay, right? I mean, they got a terrible stadium. Team is blah. They sent down Blake Snell yesterday because he's throwing 1,000 pitches in 5 innings. So if you have him, you may want to move on there. Snell was as a prized prospect. Last season was solid. This year, not so good.
Yeah, he got roughed up yesterday. Threw 113 pitches, like George said, through 5 2/3. 6 earned runs, 6 hits, 3 walks. Gives up the homer to Betts. Last thing I'll say on this game, Craig Kimbrell, American League leading 11th save. So he's paying off for a guy you might have paid a little bit for in drafts.
Striking everybody out, too. I mean, he's just crazy. He's going through. He looks like the Craig Kimbrell of old. but he's absolutely – is there a Mike Kimbrell? I don't even know a Mike Kimbrell.
I don't think so.
I just like the name, I guess. But he's striking everybody out. He was a top – probably top 8 closer coming in. I certainly wasn't up there with Britton, Jansen, Chapman, but he was the next level after that. We were worried last year he had control problems. Ball wasn't always going where he wanted it to go. We were thinking maybe he's on a decline. Once again, not so much.
Yeah, he's no Greg Holland in the National League, but he's doing all right. Greg Holland leads the majors with 15 saves currently. Last game I really wanted to highlight, we can go through a whole bunch more, but the last game I really wanted to highlight was the Cardinals-Cubs. So Carlos Martinez actually outbattles John Lester yesterday. Lester, really a very pedestrian outing. 5 2/3, gives up 3 runs, 6 hits, 4 walks. Not very sharp. Carlos Martinez at 6 2/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts. So he beats out Lester. Neither is particularly sharp, but Carlos Martinez at the plate yesterday was massive. He 2 for 3. He gets the RBI yesterday on a bunt. The Cubs, Lester was unable to field it at home, so he's huge. Pham and Sierra, they're 7, 8, 9 hitters, basically got the job done yesterday against Chicago. But there was a really key play in this game. First of all, Ian Happ, rookie, called up his major league debut yesterday. The Cubs are pretty banged up. You should know Chris Bryant did not play again yesterday. Ian Happ comes up, hits a homer in his major league debut. Unfortunately, it is tainted by the fact that in a key point in the game, the Cards end up getting a shot back to the pitcher. They try to turn two, and Happ, to me, looks like a perfectly legal slide, trying to break up the double play, which he does so. He's forced out, but he is then not only called out, but Rizzo, who hit the ball on the ground to the pitcher, is then called out for slide interference because Happ slid past and through the bag. Despite the fact that he didn't make contact with the player, despite the fact that he was in the baseline, he gets called out. Madden protested. It was upheld by review because the umpire called it that way on the play. So, George, I want to put it in your lap. We grew up with plays like this being perfectly legal, and that was as clean a slide as I've seen. But according to the new rules, it isn't.
Right, so therefore it's not a clean slide. And I'm on board with you. You should have to slide to the base. If you can't touch the base, then what are you doing? Then you're going after the player. You said he didn't touch the player. That's only because the player jumped over him.
That's true.
I mean, that's why he didn't touch the player. The player avoided him, or else he would have taken him. I wasn't – don't get me wrong. This was not a dirty slide at all, but he slid past the base. And I kind of agree with the rule. Don't get me wrong. We wanted to go back the way it was. That doesn't bother me either. But once again, when you slide to a base, you should be sliding to touch the base. You know, if you can't touch the base, then you actually are trying to take out the player. So he didn't make – listen, it's probably less than a foot that he couldn't touch the base. You know, I mean, it was that. It wasn't like he slid 5 feet past it. It was close. That's why it's not certainly not a dirty play here. But I don't mind the rule. I don't. I can go either way on this. But it's not. I understand Madden getting all upset, but we all know the rule. It's been here for a couple of seasons now. So you can flip out about it all you want. He's a rookie. Didn't understand it. Didn't know the rule. Maybe I don't know if they have it in the minor leagues as well. But it happens. What are you going to do? You move on. For them to explode and blow about the rule seems more like a kid sour crying because he didn't get candy. Yeah,
a little bit of sour grapes. So, all right, well, I didn't expect you to take that stance, but I can't argue with it. It's really an injury prevention situation. Plus, we obviously had the old ridiculousness of neighborhood plays and guys that were many feet outside the baseline trying to take guys out. So you have a play like this, which doesn't really seem, excuse me, egregious. But we do have a situation where he's called out. It does impact the game. As you said, it is the rule, so you can't really look at the rule book and complain. I think it's just a lot of managers and players who've been in baseball for a long time are still adjusting to it, frankly. One other note here, Jed Jerko, George, continues to put on a display. He hits another homer yesterday. He's 337 on the season. He's a guy that we weren't sure would get enough at bats this year. He would be a good guy in deep leagues. We figured he'd find a way to get on the field at some point and hit enough homers, but he's really adding in a big way because the Cardinals have been banged up.
Yeah, he's been proved to be a very good addition since coming over from San Diego last year. He provides power, provides depth, can play a couple of positions there. So he's been a very nice addition and probably someone who should be on your fantasy team right now. He can drive you a little crazy because he won't play every day, and you wonder what's going to happen there when everyone's healthy on the Cardinals infield. But he's a player I don't mind. Nice little utility middle infielder.
Yeah, I think he's the ultimate guy when there's one of our cuts during commercials is Mike Florio saying that you win these leagues by streaming players. And honestly, if Jerko starts to lose at bats, just take advantage of what he did now. I had him on a watch list, and he got scooped right out from under me a couple of weeks back, and that owner is reaping the benefits. I wish I had picked him up, but too little too late. So I also cut Jose Bautista at the wrong time, 2 homers in the last 2 games. So we'll get into that. We'll talk who's hot, who's not, next with George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Happy Mother's Day from the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back in a couple of minutes. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Let me go over George's article for the week. Who's hot, who's not. Might take a look at the closer report a little bit later today. But, you know, it's Mother's Day. It's a nice spring day right now in New York, but we're supposed to get a little bit of rain later. We had about 24 hours of rain straight, so I'm just about fed up with that. And it created a whole reorganization of Derek Jeter's big day tonight, big night tonight, where his number will be retired in Yankee Stadium, leaving only the number 6 as the last single-digit number yet to be retired. And I don't know that that's going to happen for Joe Torre. Would you expect that, George?
Yeah, I actually would. I think it will happen. I mean, the man won.
I guess it makes sense, yeah.
How many World Series did he win? The man won a bunch. I think it will happen eventually. I know Torre and Steinbrenner had a falling out at one point. I don't know how long that needs to go away before the Suns still reward him with the his number of retirement. But I think it should happen eventually. Hope it does. As far as that, I can't believe how much people are trying to make a story out of A-Rod not showing up tonight. Listen, A-Rod and Jeter haven't gotten along for a long time. Right? Yeah. Jeter didn't come to A-Rod's last game. They're not friends. They don't like each other. Get over
it. I agree. Yeah, I don't see that. I'm with you on that. It's something for people to write about, but they haven't really been friends for a very long time. They weren't friends when they were teammates. They were teammates. You know, they were friends a long time ago. There was a little bit of a falling out. A-Rod made some public comments that were, I didn't think there was any other way to perceive it as fairly negative commentary, and then they ended up on the same team. I thought if I'm blame Jeter for anything, I thought he could have kind of buried the hatchet for team's sake. He didn't have to be friends with A-Rod, but ultimately they haven't been friends for a long time. If you were being honored and there was a guy that they brought in that you didn't like, you wouldn't really be happy about it. So I'm sure they asked Jeter, or maybe they didn't. Bottom line is, it's understood that A-Rod's not really going to be there for his big night.
I'm pretty sure Jeter was asked, who would you like to be here? And I don't think A-Rod was on that list.
Yeah,
I mean, you said it. The main comment that A-Rod made was back in the day, I think it was Sports Illustrated, it might have been, was that when you're trying to beat the Yankees, Jeter's not one of the players you're worried about. You know, right. And in some cases, I understand what A-Rod was trying to say. You know, Jeter's not the big home run hitter. You're not going to hit a grand slam, not going to hit 2 home runs a game, not going to strike out 20 batters pitching. I get it, what he was trying to say. But listen, it was a stupid thing to say. And they were friends, and now they're not. It's really that simple. You know, I'm sure Tino Martinez, Paul O'Neill, Mariano Rivera, Pettit, Posada, I'm sure they were all invited. I don't know whether all 5 are going to show tonight. You know, Joe Torre, I'm sure, was, you know, guys that Jeter wants to be with. Maybe a couple of teammates that he enjoyed playing with. A-Rod's not one of them. And why they're trying to make such a big deal out of this is beyond me.
You know, the one guy that always shows up because they were buddies from back in the day, Gerald Williams. A little bit of a blast from the past. He and Jeter are tight. I guarantee you see him there. He was at Jeter's last game. I'm sure the list of luminaries is out there somewhere on the internet. I haven't read much about it. I'll take in the game tonight and the ceremonies when I can, you know, in between kids' bedtimes and all that kind of stuff. Kudos to him. We'll talk about him a little bit later, maybe get your favorite Jeter moment. But we'll focus on your article for the week, Who's Hot, Who's Not. Jason Worth leads off the Who's Hot, and Worth has hit 21 bombs last year, is on pace to better that number this year, George. So a little bit about Jason Worth.
Yeah, I think he's a surprise. It's his contract year, so I always like that. You know, he's playing for a new contract. He more than likely won't be back at Washington next year unless he's willing to sign a cheap deal. So he's a pretty good source of power there. What's nice, surprising this season, is that he's hitting for average as well. So sometimes his power, which is, he's not going to get 30 home runs, but he's a 20 home run guy, but he's going to come with a dragon average. So we don't like that. This year, not so much. So it's something you could look forward to there. He's also a little banged up right now, though. So if he was available, you might want to take the cautious route there to make sure he's not going to end up like everybody else on the DL this season. This season's turning into it's stay healthy or die. You know, you almost have no choice. So you better have a deep bench here. Worth aggravated a groin muscle. So that's not good. That can take a while. He originally had the injury last month. It says, according to him, that it's not as bad as it originally was. But they have a doubleheader today. I think it'll be a good if he doesn't play at all today, then we have a problem. Plays one game, then I'm pretty sure it's just sore. He'll be all right.
Yeah, Worth's kind of an interesting player to me for this reason. I mean, he's got 225 career home runs. He's actually been in the league for 15 years. I don't know if people realize that he's 38 years old. He's currently hitting .303, and as George wrote in the article, he's on pace for another 20 homer season. He's got six currently. But what's always curious to me is, what will be curious to me is what kind of market he would see. Does he become a DH and come over to the AL for a one-year deal or a couple-of-year deal? I mean, Worth, you use the phrase all the time, and I like the way you use it. He's winning the game of baseball, or he's winning the game of football. You use it a lot when guys come to managing their financial health correctly. Worth really benefited, as we all know, from a soft market back in 2011. It was a very soft free agency market, but teams were looking for power, and the Worth contract got bid up. It was a massive contract. He's made to date $137 million nearly. He's made over 80 in the last four seasons. This is well over $100 million contract in its totality. So what kind of market do you think somebody like that would see at 38 years of age? Obviously, this is going to help him some, but is it going to be a one-year prove-it deal until he retires?
He's not going to anything more than two. Maybe it's 1 year and an option. I think that's the best he can hope for next season. Like I said, he could still be a somewhat useful player. Not going to get anywhere near the AAV he was getting. You know, he's certainly not going to get 20 plus million a year. My guess is it could be, you know, 1 year, 12 million with an option for 2 years, probably a team option, not a player option, somewhere along those lines.
And you talked about it being a contract year. Here's what he did his last year in Philly in 2010. He led the league with 46 doubles. He hit .296. He hit 27 homers, which is a career high, his second most that he hit in a season, with 85 ribbies. He stole 13 bases. He scored 106 runs, and he finished eighth in the MVP voting. So last time a contract rolled around for Jason Worth, he did just fine, and he cashed in. So hopefully he helps himself a little bit here towards the end of his career. He's still playing well, so he's an asset somewhere. And just ask Carlos Beltran. You just got to keep doing it, and people keep paying you.
It's amazing how that works out, right? Professional hitter. If he can play the field too, he's not purely a DH. That's always a good thing as well, because if you're just purely a DH, that's a little harder nowadays. Teams don't like to clog up that spot.
True. So Jason Vargas, Kansas City Royals, next player on your list, 1.01 ERA and a .92 WHIP. How is this possible when his average fastball is only 86 miles per hour, George?
I don't know. This is a sell your soul to the devil guy. You know, pumpkin at midnight. Sooner or later, this is ending. If I have Vargas, I wrote this in the column. If I have Vargas, I am selling high. I mean, high sell. Because I don't want to get caught when the worm turns here. And it's going to turn. He's got a 1.01 ERA. I mean, that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I know he gets helped. Pitcher has his home games in KC. It might be, outside of maybe Oakland, the best pitcher's ballpark in the American League. You know, Tampa Bay's up there as well. Vast outfield, hard to hit the ball out here. But what he's doing is pretty amazing. And he's still striking out almost a batter an inning, too. His average fastball is 86. You know, and that hasn't changed. It's never been above 90. He's always been 86, 88 in that range. So I don't know how he's doing it. You know, he's come back from the surgery, pitching very well. But I think the bottom line for me is I want to move on here. I want to get going while the going's good. So I'm looking to move him, see what you can get.
He only pitched 12 games in the last two seasons. He currently leads the league in ERA. As George said, he's not a guy that you would expect. I mean, his strikeouts per nine right now are 7.9. That's nearly two above his career average. So I think you're right. It's a sell high guy, but you're cashing in right now. If you picked him up, I'm sure you picked him up off the waiver wire. Very highly doubtful that anybody drafted him. So just reap the benefits and see if you can move him right now. A guy that we actually talked about, the next guy on your list, a guy that we talked about quite a bit. Like, what was he going to be this year? Was he going to have any consistency? And as you write here, you're a big fan of the band Queen. They have a song called I'm Going Slightly Mad, and you've been on that road waiting for E-Rod to become the pitcher you've expected him to become. Is it finally happening?
I think it is. I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez is someone I've been dying with for a couple of seasons now. I played a deep dynasty league, and I've had it for, I don't know, 5 years in that league. But since he first came on the scene, was with Baltimore. Baltimore got rid of him in the Andrew Miller trade when they acquired Miller from Boston. Rodriguez went to Boston. So I've been waiting for this kid. I think this kid has eventually number one stuff. Yeah, but I'll take number two, no problem there. And he seems to have finally figured it out. He's healthy. He's had knee injuries the past couple of years, so maybe he hasn't been able to push off as well, land on the knee, whatever it might be. Now everything's clicking here. I think he is the real deal. A lefty pitching at Fenway will always worry me somewhat with the monster there in left field. Easy to pull the ball there, so he might still have some growing pains to undergo. But Erod is someone I want both this season and long term.
You know, I'm with you. He's only 24 years of age. He just turned 24, so he won't turn 25 until like next April. But really the struggle for him has been able to go deep into games, right? As you said, he had some knee injuries, but most of his outings, and I had him on a team 2 years ago, most of his outings, he'd be out before the sixth inning rolled around. So that was a big frustration. He would be out on decisions a lot of times, despite the fact that he was pitching okay. So it looks like he's getting more consistency now, pitching to a 2.8 ERA, and you got the strikeouts are way up, 35 innings pitched and 42 strikeouts.
Yeah, tell me that song's not going through your head now. My daughter's all of a sudden a big Queen fan. Tell me all Queen facts. It's amazing. That's how that little reference came out, because she's been just driving me in. I shouldn't say nuts, as I love Queen, but just driving me nuts with facts about Queen, about how many songs they have, which ones were number one.
One of the best selling rock groups of all time.
I think Freddie Mercury might be the best singer of all time.
You know, rock music is concerned. As far as rock music is concerned, I would put him up against anybody. So there's your Queen segment for the day. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more who's hot, who's not, with George Kurtz on this Mother's Day. Join us after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Roto Experts. The RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package is your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a Roto scientist. We'll help you set the ideal lineups every week, and this season you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. Get the Roto Experts exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. And we're talking about one of the articles from the excuse me. George, I got nailed by the producer. He came back and I wasn't ready, and I had taken a bite to eat and I screwed up that whole read, so I apologize. But in any event, your article is found in the in-season exclusive Edge baseball package, and very informative. This and your closer report and many other things that can help people pick guys up and tweak those teams, improve those teams. I cut Matt Moore yesterday, by the way. It was like the wrong time to cut him, obviously, because he came up with kind of a jam yesterday, got the win, pitched really well, and that's just the luck of the draw. What are you going to do? We talked about it yesterday. It wasn't looking good for him necessarily. The Reds have been fairly tough on pitchers early in the season, but Matt Moore actually pitched 7 1/3, one run and 7 strikeouts yesterday. I really, really needed that outing, and I didn't get it. I punted him for Kevin Gausman, so we'll see. I have to just play the long game and not worry about one outing.
That is really the way it works out. It sucks to be behind the eight ball right away, where all of a sudden, I got to make up this great start by Moore. But it's a long season. Yeah, I think people are forgetting that. We're only May 14th. It's Mother's Day. Right, we still got Father's Day. You got July 4th. Then you got Labor Day. You got a long ways to go in this baseball season. Unless you're like buried, I really wouldn't panic yet. I'm getting some questions in the Roto Expert email answer queue telling me, I'm punting the season. I'm done. I'm already looking forward towards next season. Should I make this trade in the Keeper League? It's like, wow, how bad is your team that really 5-6 weeks in, you're looking to move on?
Yeah, look, I've been able to tweak the team, and like I was despondent a week ago because I was in 9th place, and then I soared up to 2nd because the team got hot, and I settled in around 5th. I got some work to do, but I think I could, make a run at least to 2nd place, which is, it's not winning, but
nothing is written in stone yet.
That's right. That's right. And the first place team's looking good, but it doesn't mean that he's going to it doesn't mean he's going to run away with it necessarily, even though he's got a big lead now. You can just keep chipping away, keep chipping away, keep chipping away, like I've done with my roster. I got Conforto in, Bautista out, Gausman in, Moore out. And so what? I timed it wrong on those. I'll make it up somewhere else along the line. In any event, we talked a lot about him yesterday, actually, so you can gloss over it if you like. But Cody Bellinger is a guy that you wrote about. It's just kind of crazy that a rookie comes in, he's hitting cleanup, and he's tearing it up. As you said yesterday and in this article, outside of maybe Corey Seager, he's their best offensive player. Cody Bellinger's been on fire. He's only 21 years old.
Yeah, he's a top prospect. We've been waiting for him for a while. The worry was, where's he going to play? You know, Adrian Gonzalez blocks him at first base. He only really started playing the outfield in spring training this year to cover them, so maybe have a chance to play there. And now he's up with the big teams. Gonzalez is on the DL. There are other players on the DL that let him get some outfield time, and he's tearing it up. I mean, tearing it up looks great. I don't see how. Really, I don't see how they could send him down, unless he just craters over the next couple of weeks. I don't see how they could send him down when Gonzalez or Ethier or any other injury comes back. I think he is their best hitter right now, other than Corey Seager. Gonzalez hasn't hit now much in almost two seasons. And really, Puig is disappointed. Peterson's disappointed. Utley's well past his prime. Justin Turner, nice player, not a superstar or anything like that. I think they'd be crazy to consider sending Bellinger down. I think he has to stay here for good.
Totally agree. It might be frustrating that he's not in the lineup every day when people get healthy, but I think you keep a guy like that around, especially a team that's contending for the playoffs and for greater riches than that. What I would ask you about Bellinger is long term, what do you expect his position to be? Adrian Gonzalez only around through the end of next season, so do you see him slide in at first base? Is he going to be an outfielder long term? What's the deal?
I would assume he's a first baseman. And there's always a chance that, the Dodgers have money. They could end up buying a first baseman and move Bellinger to the outfield, since he looks like he's capable of playing out there. But I think in the end, they realize he is a first baseman. You don't want to risk somebody who can hit like this. I think you'd rather have him at first base. He's going to provide that power for a corner infield spot. So I think he will be their first baseman. But, hey, he might qualify at both positions next year for you.
Yeah. Michael Conforto is the next guy you have in your list of who's hot. You said he's their best natural hitter aside from Yoenis Cespedes. And that's what guys like, Jay Bruce is a power guy. So Conforto, the best natural hitter. We thought it was ridiculous that they couldn't figure out a way to solidify him in the lineup for really the last year plus. But here he is, and he's not going anywhere.
Well, it's Terry Collins. I'm not going to say he shouldn't be going anywhere. But Collins has had some interesting playing time issues with Conforto. I think a lot of this, or some of this, is because the Mets don't have a center fielder on their roster. Conforto's not a center fielder. Cespedes isn't a center fielder. Bruce isn't a center fielder. Granted, at this point in his career, is not a center fielder. So that's hurt some issues there. But what's been infuriating is this is a problem the Mets had last year, too. Didn't address it in the offseason. Didn't fix it. You're shocked it's happening again. So how the Mets handle their roster is questionable at best. Qualifying Duda and having him come back when you really probably should have just said goodbye, Lucas Duda, and maybe moves one of these guys to first base to alleviate the logjam in the outfield. That would have been an option. Either way, Conforto, Mets got a gift when they were able to draft him because I believe he's a Boris Klein. He wanted a lot of money. So he fell in the draft. I think he fell to 11th or 12th overall, where he really should have been a top five player. So they got, like I said, he got a gift. He was a gift from God. And they just didn't know how to use it. He went through the minors, no problem. The kid can hit. He should not be platooned against left-handers because, he can't hit left-handers. If you don't play him against left-handers, then he can't hit left-handers. You got to let him play. Got to let him hit. He's a future star. Not a Mike Trout, Bryce Harper superstar, but a future star.
Yeah. All-star type of guy. You're right. He fell to 10th coming out of Oregon State. He is a Boris client. And this year, he's currently 8 homers with a .327 batting average. The on-base percentage is super impressive right now. It's at .414 right now. The OPS over 1, slugging at .622. He's mashing. The injuries have helped Collins not have to explain having him out of the lineup. But bottom line is, when everybody's healthy, he still should be one of the outfielders out there every single day. So we'll continue to track how Terry Collins manages that. Turning the page over to who's not, Nomar Mazara, a guy we talked about a bunch during the preseason, got off to a hot start, but as you said, he cratered He's not only does he have only 19 hits in his last 100 at-bats, but he's being benched. So what do you do if you're a Mazzara owner?
Well, you hold the course. I mean, once again, I think he'll be fine. He is starting to hit again now. My biggest concern was now they were benching him a little bit. By benching, I don't mean planting him on the bench for a week, but they were, you know, rested him twice this week. You know, funny other players there. I think when Beltre comes back, you look at that, there's going to be a lot of mouths to feed there, whereas people got to sit. I mean, Joey Gallo's hitting. We talked about him with Matt Modica yesterday, hitting all those home runs. He's going to might find a place to play. That's where my biggest worry is. Beltre, especially once he comes back and proves himself healthy, Beltre can be back by the end of May, I think, is going to play every day. That might take a week or two after he comes back, but he's going to play every day. You know, so now you got those three outfield spots, Gomez, you got Gallo, Mazzara, Sinsu Chu, Napoli has got a first base DH. Yeah, someone's almost every day someone's got to sit. The Shields, once again, you got center field problems too there, where you want a real center fielder in there. Someone's got to sit.
He said Profar has already been sent down too.
Yeah, Profar's, he was terrible. They had Profar, I think the injuries with him really set him back years ago with the shoulder injuries. He'll never become the player he was going to be. And he's also a player, by the way, that might need a change of scenery. Texas probably screwed up with him, not trading him when he had immense trade value, or at least good trade value over the past couple of off seasons. Kept holding on to him, holding on, hoping he would pay off. He didn't. But Mazzara's going to be fine. Bottom line is Mazzara's fine. Not releasing him. I might, coming into this week, and I know the two leagues I have, I might bench him this week. I had other options there to put in ahead of him, let him break out of it. And I think he looks like he is starting to break out of it now. Or not. He had a couple of hits last night, so he looked good there. So, like I said, Mazzara is somebody. Bench this week. I'm not releasing him. You know, you can't trade him. You're not going to get much trade value there. But he probably goes back into my starting lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, just a quick tangent on the Profar thing. I think you're right. He was talked about so much within fantasy circles as a guy that might break out, and really in MLB circles. I think you're right. They have a lot of talent in the field. They've obviously had a lot of big time hitters, and Profar was a guy who, honestly, you know, from the time he was 19, he was called up, and he's just kind of kicked around in this quadruple A, triple A scenario. And he's through 200 games, he's hitting .229 in the majors. I think you're right. It's probably best for them to move on. Unfortunately, his trade value is a small fraction of where it was a few years ago.
Yeah, that's it. They screwed that up. I understand he was a top prospect. This kid was supposed to be a star. You know, he had multiple shoulder injuries that seemed to have certainly derailed his career. I don't want to say wrecked it. Maybe in time he'll build it up. Maybe so like Jason Heyward, where his swing changed. And that really changed everything about him. Maybe he'll figure it out in time. He's still young. But if I'm Texas, like I said, I think I would have moved him this offseason. I think San Diego was big on him. You should have moved him for what you could have gotten then. You didn't really need him. Why take the chance? It's the reason why some GMs don't believe in holding on to prospects because, hey, a lot of them aren't going to work out. I'd rather trade them for proven players.
Yeah, I mean, there's analytics proving that there's only a certain percentage hit rate. Real quick, 30 seconds on Trevor Bauer, who has the worst ERA amongst qualified starters in Major League Baseball at 7.36.
Yeah, he's terrible right now. No doubt he's terrible. Right up there with CeCe Sabathia. They are going to try. They say there's nothing wrong with the stuff. Francona said it, so does Bauer, so they're not going to change anything. I guess that's good or bad, depending on how you look at it. But Trevor Bauer, certainly not in my starting lineup right now. He's just pretty much a place filler anyway.
Back, we'll wrap up Who's Not after the break. Mike and George, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike Lute and George Kurtz. And you can take this, all of this, this entire maelstrom of content and music and debate with you wherever you go. You take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear myself and George. You can hear Tony Sincotta and Cha-Cha, Benny Ricciardi. You can hear Greg Sussman and Corey Parson whenever you listen during the week. Bottom line is Roto Experts are on 8 to 10 every day of the week. And you can take it with you wherever you go. So get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store, on Google Play, and take the experts with you. So thanks for joining us on this Mother's Day. George, we'll wrap up really quick with a quick segment here. We talked a little bit yesterday about how you probably wish you had Carlos Carrasco instead of Danny Salazar, and it's not working out for Salazar right now. 5.2 ERA and a 1.5 whip.
Yeah, and now for Salazar, they are going to try different things. So with Bauer, they're not going to change anything. Salazar, they do want to change some things, especially in the early going, having some trouble in the first inning. We've seen pitchers like this before, where if you don't get them the first time through the order, you generally don't get them. Sometimes they just don't translate from the bullpen to the mound. For whatever reason it is, Salazar seems to be one of those guys this year. I'm a believer in Salazar. I'm not going to panic here. I might, once again, I might take him out of my lineup this week. I don't know who he matches up against. If I don't like the matchup, he's not pitching well, I might sit him if I have somebody to go in above him. Well, I don't mind him pitching well once, then putting him back in here. I'll play it safe.
Another guy on this list, Hunter Pence, and you don't have to tell me because I cut Hunter Pence a couple weeks ago. I think he was my last outfielder that I drafted in my league, and he started off really well. I was like, whoa, this is working out. He might be a guy that I play every day, and he's cooled off completely. So Hunter Pence is a, depending on the size of your league, a player that you're going to have on your bench, or you'd even cut if it was a shallower league. So, as you said, he's only batting .244 with three homers. A lot of that success was early in the season. So, Giants as a team are having trouble hitting the deep ball. Pence is just really disappointing.
Yeah, I think I'm about ready to move on from Pence here myself in most leagues. Just not doing anything. Soon later, he's going to get hurt again. But Giants as a team aren't hitting at all. They're one of the worst power-hitting teams in the majors right now, which playing in 3-com is whatever they call that park nowadays. I don't even know anymore. I don't even know why I bother.
AT&T Park? Is it AT&T Park?
Isn't that the Cowboys?
I think it is as well. That's AT&T Stadium.
They got two. AT&T has two. That doesn't sound fair.
All right, last guy on your list. I like Hunter Pence as a player, but I mean, what am I going to do?
I like him as a guy. I'm sure he's a great guy. He's not helping me in fantasy. He's got to go.
Yeah. Garrett Cole, the only reason you put him on here is because struggling for wins. Pirates are struggling for wins. Great pitcher hitting all the other categories, but, you know, he's had two guys take no hitters into deep into games against him, or against his team. So, yeah, your thoughts about Garrett Cole in general.
Yeah, I think that was a personal frustration of mine, as I own Cole in I think 3 or 4 leagues, and I can't get a W no matter how well he pitches. I think right now Cole needs to pitch a no-hitter for them to get a W. He's sort of the poster child for quality start over wins, because once again, he's pitching great, but the Pirates just can't score. They can't score in general for anybody. They're not a very good offensive team, and this is not all about Starling Marte. I understand you lose Marte, you lose some offense here, but yeah. McCutcheon's got to pick it up. Polanco's got to pick it up. Josh Bell, the prize rookie, is starting to hit a little bit. That would certainly help, but they need some secondary scoring here pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 47 strikeouts through 50 innings. He's 1-4, which is the frustration. The only thing that concerns me, George, he's given up 7 homers already on the season. That matches his total from all of last year, which was an abbreviated season. But really, he's never given up more than 11 homers in a season. He's already given up 7 bombs. That concern you?
It looks like they're mostly solo shots. I'll live with it.
Okay. So that's it. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We're going to have Tony Cicada in the next hour at 9:39. I hope you're having a good Mother's Day so far. Join us after the break. We'll talk about Zach Greinke a little bit. Get into the Carolina Panthers and how they're going to change after their draft. It's Mike and George. Happy Mother's Day. We're back in a couple of minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Happy to join you on this Mother's Day. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you're getting in a little bit of sports talk before you got to attend to your Mother's Day obligations. That's what George and I are doing. So we'll be wrapping up here in the next hour. We'll pass it over to Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha for Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. After that, Al Melchior will take you through an hour of FanRag Fantasy Baseball, and then we'll go back to Fantasy Bagels and Baseball so you get in a little bit of your DFS knowledge for the day. George, Derek Jeter being honored on this Mother's Day. The Yankees have a doubleheader today. Keep that in mind. Yesterday's rainout got pushed to today. I think that's a 2 o'clock start, you told me?
Yeah, 2 o'clock the first game. I think the second game is 7:30 or pretty much right after Derek Jeter's festivities. It's around 7:30, 8 o'clock. That game will be on ESPN.
ESPN's kicking off the coverage at 6:30, so it's going to be a...
I'm pretty sure it's on right now.
Yeah, it may be. Look, the guy had a tremendous career. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Is in the elite pantheon of talented MLB players. Not necessarily, but his career is larger than life. It's because he played in New York. It's because he won. It's because he was a shortstop for the Yankees. This number retirement is well-deserved. I don't think it's too early when it's a player like this. Why wait? There's no suspense. You knew they were going to do this, so I have no issue whatsoever with this being done. But if you are and I know plenty of Red Sox fans that just can't even stand to look at Derek Jeter, I'm sure people are getting a little bit fed up with it, but I'm okay with it. So what's your favorite Derek Jeter moment, George?
My favorite Derek Jeter moment? Probably the home run in the World Series in November, Mr. November, when he hit the game winner there. That would probably be it. He dove into the stands. We all remember that. The play in Oakland where you could tell me you practiced that play all you want. That's BS. I don't know how he ended up there. Great read, instincts, whatever you want to call it. That's a fantastic play where he got Jeremy Giambi at the plate on the flip to Posada. That would certainly have to be up there as one of them. Leading off game, I think it was game 3 against the Mets in the Subway Series. Leading that off with a home run would it be up there as well. He hit that home run at Shea Stadium. So there are quite a few here, but I guess for me, I mean, it's hard to pass up winning a World Series game. So Mr. November against Arizona would have to be it.
That one's got to be mine because I was at the game, George. I was sitting in the upper deck on the first row of the upper deck down the right field line, so he basically hit it beneath me, and the place went, you want to talk about a stadium going bananas? That's number one, folks. I was at an NCAA championship game where there was a buzzer beater in basketball last year. And the place went nuts, but that was not a partisan crowd. Yankee Stadium, I was in the upper deck, and it was bouncing up and down. The place went bananas. The flip play is sort of my favorite one to look at, but I was at the game, so it's got to be number one for me. I'll explain a little bit more about it. It was a very cool moment. We'll talk about a little bit about Jeter. I want to get to Zach Greinke. I want to get to the Carolina Panthers. How are they going to switch it up with Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel? How does that help Cam Newton? Talk about that more after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You take the world from your 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app. That's FNTSY. Sports Radio app in the iTunes store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear us every Saturday and Sunday. You can hear Tony Sincotta, who will be with us in about a half an hour. You can hear him on the treadmill. He's up at God knows what time every day doing the 6 to 8 shows, Sincotta and Engel. He does DFS lineup lock shows. He does fantasy comedy half hour, fantasy stand-up. He's got like 5 shows, right, George?
I'm not sure Tony sleeps.
He doesn't. He sleeps very little. It's not the healthiest move, but
that might explain some things.
Yeah, he doesn't sleep very much at all, but he does provide tremendous fantasy content, both DFS and season-long information. So he does DFS lineup block shows with Benny Riccardi during the week, and he's with Scott Engel every morning. So please download the app by entering FNTSY in the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store and take the experts with you. So we'll be sure to talk to Tony in about a half an hour. He'll give us a nice lay of the land on DFS. Just to finish up my Jeter story. So I used to work for a company and they would often have Yankee tickets lying around. They're very dialed in with the Yankees. It was a memorabilia company, so which we actually have a partnership with. So here at Fantasy Sports Radio Network. But in any event, I got these tickets. It was me and 3 coworkers, and we got front row tickets to the Yankee game. It was game four of the 2001 World Series. It was a crazy time here in New York, obviously. 9/11 had just occurred a few weeks earlier. I actually moved into downtown Manhattan, the financial district, on September 8th, 2001, two blocks from where the World Trade Center was. So it was a crazy time, obviously, a tragic time for a lot of people here in New York. My life was totally turned upside down. I felt like I was lucky in some ways. And here I was sitting in Yankee Stadium rooting them on after the A's series, which was nuts. And here they are in the Mariners series, and I went to the Mariners series. That was the year that the Mariners had won 116 games, George, you remember, obviously. I went to the clinching game there where the Yankees steamrolled the Mariners 4-1. I was sitting in the bleachers with the American flag during the national anthem, and that place was going crazy then, and here I was. Game four, in any event. Schilling pitched a gem. Right? The Yankees were going to be down 3-1. It was done. Schilling had locked it up, and Byung-Hyun Kim comes in there in the ninth inning. O'Neill gets on base, and then boom, Tino hits a laser, and the game is tied. It was out of nowhere, sort of unexpected, and the place, you could rip the roof off. And you could hear by the way, in that eighth inning, when Schilling walked off the mound, you could hear a pin drop because the Yankees hadn't done anything. It was, we were kind of depressed. Like, we're going to be down 3-1. Tino hits the rocket. They tie the game. And then amazingly, Bob Brenly puts Byung-Hyun Kim out there for the 10th inning. And then Jeter has the 9-pitch at bat. And then bananas. It really was a crazy moment when you consider everything that happened in and around it. Jeter was really just, that's the moment. I mean, it's one I'll never forget. It's got to be the top two sports moments I've ever been at. I've been to some pretty cool games over the years.
Yeah, sounds like it. I think that'd be the definition of making a long story short, which didn't happen. But thank you for reliving the moment for you, Mike.
Yeah, it was fun. It's Jeter Day. What else am I going to tell that story?
Jeter Day. It should be, I'm surprised the Yankees made this a nighttime affair for Jeter Night. I'm even a little bit surprised it's on Mother's Day, because that's
they requested it, apparently.
Who's they?
Yankees sort of worked it out with ESPN in order to get this thing on national television.
That's what I heard. It's Yankees should know a little bit. It's not going to be the nicest night tonight. It's probably going to be it could be rainy. I mean, even if it wasn't rainy, it's mid-May in New York is not always going to be a definite nice day. It hasn't been that way for decades here in mid-May. So, like I said, we discussed this yesterday. I wonder how many fans are coming to this 2 o'clock game. Because, once again, it's a single admission, so they're only taking tickets if you have tickets for the night game. That's a long day to show up 2 o'clock. You're going to be there 9 hours. That's a long time in a ballpark, especially with that dead time in between. We probably got to kill an hour and a half between anything. So I'm curious to see how this is going to work.
It's a good question, because the one thing, now parks typically don't let you leave and come back in.
No.
This has got to be a situation where they have to make some sort of exception.
I doubt it. Not on Jeter Night.
That's the problem, considering the security they're going to want to have around tonight's game. It's going to be a tough deal. The Yankees never would do something like this and punt the attendance on a game, except for what's happening tonight. It's really, I'm surprised they did it, but what are you going to do? They weren't going to chance anything screwing up the festivities. They got to try and get that field ready and the fans in the stands as early as possible. I can see people trickling in maybe towards the end of that first game if they want to go out to Monument Park and all that kind of stuff. And Monument Park's going to get shut down early,
that
too.
That gets shut down, yeah. You can't do that either. You probably can't go to Monument Park after about 1 p.m. I don't think you're going to be able to go there between games. You're not going to be able to go there late in the game. They're going to have that whole shuttle.
Yeah, they got to set it up. They're going to have to set it up for revealing the plaque and the number and all that kind of stuff. So
I wouldn't be surprised if you watch the early game today. I'll be watching. If it's going to look like a September game where you're out of the playoffs, it's a miserable day. Where you're going to get 5,000 people, maybe. Because, once again, I can't – people have plans for Mother's Day. You have plans for Mother's Day. I have plans for Mother's Day. Even if I had tickets to the – let's say I had tickets to tonight's game, I'm probably not going to the day game because I probably already made plans to take Mom out. You know, to spend time with my mom, or spend time with family, spend time with your wife, whatever, girlfriend, whatever it might be. So I think you're right, though. I think the Yankees only did this because it's Derek Jeter. They didn't want to screw it up tonight. They do not play Houston again. I didn't look close enough to see if they have a mutual day off. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But and of course, the Yankees didn't want to play two in Houston. You know, have a double, give away a home game, so they weren't going to do that either. This might
and
have
Houston
been
didn't want to have to come back to New York for a one dayer. They weren't going to.
Well,
do that
does, you could say you don't want to. The commissioner's office could force you to do that.
Of course.
You know, so that's not an option. But they were going to reschedule it after the season, not this early in the season. So you're not going to make it for October 3rd. You know, so I guess in some ways the Yankees may have had no choice here, but they could have started the game at 12 and done a dual admission. You know, they could have done that, you know, cover some kind of deal. They decided not to. And I'm
George, you know the Yankees
there.
Really well. They never give up a dime.
Right, but that's why I'm surprised they didn't do it at 12 o'clock. Because let's face it, even if the game goes to extra innings, it's still over by 4. By starting it at 2, the earliest this game's going to end is 5.
I'm
surprised they didn't do a dual admission to start the game at 12. I think that would have been a compromise for everybody. Yesterday, people had tickets for yesterday, still get to come today. You still get home in a decent time, probably home by 4 or 5 o'clock, so you can still do dinner with mom and all that. And the Yankees don't lose a gate. The Astros don't complain as much. I mean, I guess there's not a perfect solution here, but I'm very curious as to how many fans are going to be in the stands at 2 o'clock.
Luis Severino is going to be working as quick as he's ever worked to get this thing in. So he faces off against Fierce today at 2:05. So keep that in mind. The Yankees' first game, 2:05, game two to be determined, but festivities are supposed to start around 6:30.
Here's something I can tell you, Mike. It would take a hurricane to get a rain delay during the first game. I think they're playing through. And once the game starts, they're playing through anything. I'm talking rain.
And it is supposed to rain.
I know. I mean, Noah could be building an arc in center field, and they're not going to delay that game because they know they got to get that game over with.
It might make for one of the funnier highlights of the year if it gets pretty windy and rainy. It really will take a lot. They're not going to delay this thing by a minute. Unless it's really extenuating circumstances. So
it rained during A-Rods. Remember, they got to cancel the shortened A-Rods thing because it poured?
Yeah. It sums up a lot about A-Rod. So
I wasn't going to say that, but okay.
A lot of people not happy with A-Rod and maybe higher powers than just us baseball talking heads. But in any event, so we'll see how that plays out. There was one other point I wanted to make on it, but look, we beat it dead. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Jeter. Talked about our big moments. And for those of you who don't like Jeter, I'm sure you're sick of it. But what do you want me to tell you? You know, we don't get
it's
many
a Hall
opportunities.
Of Fame player. This is going to happen. Get over it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't watch.
Right. The attendance will be funny. It is going to be rare because the people that are going to the night game, when they initially bought tickets, and I know somebody that bought tickets months ago, it wasn't a night game then, so it got moved. They made their plans, but they already spent a fortune on the tickets. They don't have to go to the other game. That's the irony of all of this. Nobody feels put out at all by the first game, so it's just bonus baseball if you feel like showing up early, and who's going to do that when they rearrange their mother's plans possibly twice in order to get this game in tonight? So we'll see how it plays out. We're going to talk about Tony about TFS in a minute. We'll talk a little bit of football in the next break. Carolina Panthers, a couple of other things. So that's it, George. We got in our Jeter segment. And I'm sure everybody's thrilled. Mike and George, back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're the Roto Experts in the morning. We're going to be having Tony Sincotta here in the next segment. George will do a little bit of football because reading an article by Bucky Brooks on NFL.com earlier today before the show. They talked a little bit about how Ron Rivera suggested that the Panthers needed to evolve offensively, and it seemed like they might turn towards opening up the playbook a little bit or changing some things in the playbook for Cam Newton. But really what it amounted to was they added two very versatile playmaking players through the draft this year, Christian McCaffrey with a top 10 pick in the first round, and then Curtis Samuel out of Ohio State, who was a really good big contributor for them the last couple of seasons. He's a jack of all trades type of guy, similar to McCaffrey. He just looks like he'll probably work out a little bit more as a receiver, maybe a Tavon Austin type in the Panthers offense. So my question to you is, how much do you think this could impact Cam Newton? Early returns on ADP rankings for him as a QB have him at eighth amongst all quarterbacks behind, and in order, I'll go Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Andrew Luck, Dak Prescott. I'm curious to see his name there. Russell Wilson, and then Cam Newton. Not that Dak doesn't deserve it. It's just, you know, it's almost a shock to the system when you see a new name enter that top six or seven. So Cam Newton at eight. Do you think that sounds about right? And how much do you think these guys could help him?
Well, with Cam Newton, I'm probably not going to invest. I mean, certainly not right now. He's not even throwing. I mean, he had shoulder surgery, so he's not going to throw until That's June. Right. You know, what if that gets delayed now? It's July. How much work is he going to how's your chance he's going to have to get to work with these guys? You know, so I'm a little wary right now. I've always been down on Cam somewhat. He's not a very accurate quarterback. Even in the big year he had, his accuracy wasn't any better. He just threw touchdowns. You know, so that's sort of like reminds me of a baseball batter to hit – you know, didn't get any more hits, but hit some more home runs, but everything else stayed the same. Is that more just luck? You know, it just has to be completed touchdowns that year. So I'm not in on Newton at all. I don't know if I'll draft him. Listen, I'm not looking at a quarterback until round 9, round 10 anyway. I'm waiting forever on quarterbacks. You know, we talked about that mock draft we did on the fantasy on the network two weeks ago. You know, I was able to get Marcus Mariota. I think it was in round 11. And I'll take that in every league. You know, and then I think Dak Prescott went round 13. I mean, this is quarterback is so deep, you can wait forever, and I will. If Newton ends up being the guy that's there when I take a quarterback in round 11, fine. I'm okay with that. But I'm not going to look to go out and grab him in round 7. Someone wants to grab him that early, he's yours. All yours. Like I said, I'm just not doing that. I'm going to wait on a quarterback. Like I said, he's been banged up. He's got the shoulder injury. I'm still, you know, I love McCaffrey, but let's see if Carolina even knows how to use him to make him effective, and that's a lot on a coach to get done there. You know, his completion percentage last year is 52.9%. 52.9. The year he had 35 touchdowns, it wasn't even 60. This man has a problem completing passes. Now he's probably not going to run as much. That takes away some of his value. So if he's not going to run in those touchdowns because they're going to worry about his concussion history, and they should be worried about it, then that takes away some of his fantasy value as well. Newton, to me, is just one of pretty much just another guy right now as far as the quarterback's concerned, along with all the Mariotas, the Cars, the guys I can wait on forever.
Yeah, you know, what's crazy is I don't think I've ever owned Cam Newton in a league, ever. I'm never the one that's going to take him. I have too many questions similar to the ones that you were just bringing up. I tend to wait. Cam Newton's always been a little bit more popular. Granted, he's been really productive from a fantasy standpoint several seasons, but he's always been a little bit too popular for me in drafts for me to take him as early as he goes. The one year I really looked at him is when he was coming off the significant injuries in the car accident season. Going into that next season, people were really down on him, and I thought it was a bit much, but I still didn't even take him there. I'm with you. I think in one quarterback leagues, look, I've totally flipped the page on this. For years, I did not want to do two QB leagues because I thought I placed too much emphasis on that position. And now it's gotten far too easy to select a position in single QB leagues. I'm leaning towards super flex leagues as a preference. It doesn't mean that I won't do one QB leagues. I'm sure I'll be in a few. But ultimately, that's where I'm at. I think you could wait all day. George just said it. Dak Prescott in the 13th. Last year, I got Matt Ryan in a keeper league. I got him in the 14th round, and now I'll have him for this year in the 11th round, and I'm obviously very comfortable with that. So what can I say? Cam, I do think these guys help him. I actually think Samuel and McCaffrey could conceivably get him some more touchdowns, some red zone style touchdowns, where instead of Cam running it, he's throwing some screens, throwing some easier passes and getting guys open like Olsen, like McCaffrey, like Samuel himself and Kelvin Benjamin. I think he's got some good red zone targets, similar to like, you know, Danny Woodhead, who kind of catches passes down near the goal line sometimes, George.
Yeah, like I said, it's I'm going to wait on quarterback. Bottom line is I'm just going to wait. Like you, my favorite league type of league is a super flex league. I prefer them by far over any other league, but I'm probably going to play, let's say if I play in 10 football leagues, 10 year-long leagues this year, probably more than half will be one quarterback leagues. People still prefer those.
Right.
if you want to put more strategy in your league, make it a super flex. You know, it changes things around some. You know, now you got to draft quarterbacks early. You got to think, boy, you can't just wait. You know, then that's in my mind, that's what I prefer. I want more strategy. I want it to be more fun. Quarterback, you could say what you want, that some teams may not have them, but it's deep for fantasy purposes.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I put my name in the ring for my hat in the ring for Scott Fishbowl. I've never done it before, and I signed up the other day. Don't know if I'm in or not yet.
You're in.
That'll be determined. But I've never done that before. Explain to me exactly how it works. There's so many people in it. It's just a bunch of different leagues. We're trying to aggregate who has the best team via a certain metric.
I don't worry about all of it. Just play to win. You're in a division. Play to win your division. Let it all work out from there. But yeah, it's some complicated formulas to make and who wins the whole thing. It is I think it's a super flex, not a two quarterback league. I believe. I know it's. I know you can start two quarterbacks. I believe it's a super flex. I've been in it for years. I like it. It's fun. But you want to score as many points as possible because there are a lot of tiebreakers at the end. You can still almost a lot of teams make the playoffs. You have to really tank not to make the playoffs. But like any other head-to-head league, there's some luck involved as well. But this is a league where I didn't do well last year because I was away on vacation, and I think I didn't know when the draft started. So my team got auto-drafted, and I didn't get a quarterback early.
I think it drafted Eddie Lacy for me.
Stupid Oof. Thing. No. Yeah, I think it'll be close to 400.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. We'll keep you posted on that, exactly how we do there. I think I only had five leagues last year because I got edged out of one in a weird way, but I think I'll probably bump it back up. Six leagues, I think, to me is my sweet spot. It wouldn't surprise me if I did more, but, you know, we got so many other responsibilities. I got to try and keep it limited. So I think six will be the number, and, you know, try and be competitive in all of those. It's easy to join, like, 30, you know, public leagues where people are kind of checked out. I'd rather just focus on the ones that we have. Plus, you and I have dynasty leagues and all that kind of stuff to pay attention to.
I hope that main dynasty league we have fixes things.
We've got some technical issues right now.
Yeah, they have some issues with I've been looking at that for a while. I have three first round picks, but the site only says I have one. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
man,
he'll get it fixed.
I'm building a dynasty here.
Yeah, our buddy Gary Davenport, he'll get it fixed. I'm sure. He'll get the job done. Michael Rathburn, I think, taking over as the commissioner there. Some of you may be familiar with those names. I know Gary can follow on IDP Manor on Twitter. So one other guy. He broke the single season record last year, George, for completion percentage, Sam Bradford. This article in Bucky Brooks is saying that he posted career highs in completion rate, 71.6%, passer rating, 99, and yards per attempt with 7 on the nose. Despite joining the team near the end of the preseason, he posted pretty efficient numbers, and he's going to be the starting quarterback as we continue to just kind of see what the deal is with Teddy Bridgewater, if there even is a deal to be had for the rest of his career. But do you think he can grow into this a little bit more as Pat Shurmur took over for Norv Turner during that midseason retirement? Do you think Sam Bradford, did you see stuff from him that makes you believe that with maybe a couple of additional weapons that he's got here and Latavius Murray, and he's got Laquon Treadwell coming back for year number two, they made a couple of additions. Do you think Sam Bradford is somebody that, you know, you see a little bit of upside with in at least a two quarterback league, if not a one quarterback league?
Well, I think the smart ass part of me wants to ask, why are we talking about Bradford? He has no business in a one quarterback league. None.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, we just said how deep quarterback is. Bradford's name is not even mentioned. Two quarterback league, yes, he has some value here. Every quarterback has value in a two quarterback league. They'll all be drafted, you know, so they're all going to go there. Bradford, he may have set the record for completion percentage last year, and by may, I mean he did, but they were all short passes. He just refused to throw the ball down the field for the most part. And maybe that's because he was worried about getting killed. You know, you throw the ball down the field, generally you got to stay in the pocket longer. That offensive line was putrid, and he would have got plastered to the turf. So bottom line is this. He's not in my top 18, so he's certainly not a QB1 for me. He's a bottom QB2. You know, with two quarterback league, he still has value there. The offensive line is better. Can't get much worse. That should help. You know, they've given him some more weapons, but nothing great yet. Not in love here. No, I don't get points for. Well, in most leagues, you don't get points per completion.
Yeah, and in the early rankings that I'm seeing here, he's not even in the top 23 here. So clearly, more people are with you than they are with Sam Bradford. I've had like a roller coaster ride with Sam Bradford to the point where I thought when he was drafted number one overall, I didn't love that pick for the Rams. I just thought playing in the Big 12 and playing in the system that he played wasn't going to translate that well to the NFL. I think we measured it last week. He's one of only two Big 12 quarterbacks. But I've come around on him a little bit. I've drafted him in some leagues, in two QB leagues, and I think he's got an opportunity to maybe do a little bit of something here and be a valuable quarterback and a QB too. Back with Tony Cicada after the break. We're going to talk MLB DFS. Mike, George, and Tony after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Going to have Tony Cicada coming up here in a couple of minutes. George and I are screaming towards 10 o'clock when we hand it over to Tony and Cha-Cha, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. We'll have Al Melchior with FanRag Fantasy Baseball from 12 to 1, and then Fantasy Bagels and Baseball get a little bit of replay so you can check in on all of the DFS information that you might need. George, before we dive into DFS, I listened to Buster Olney's podcast a couple of days ago, or last night. I think it was recorded a couple of days ago. And the topic came up, and I wanted to bring this up earlier, just, you know, didn't have enough time. The topic came up of potentially moving on from Zach Greinke. Now that he's really pitching well, they obviously have a lot dedicated to him from a salary standpoint. And if Colorado keeps playing the way they are and the Dodgers keep surging ahead, you know, Arizona's actually playing all right now, 21-17. Do you think that they should make the strategic decision to move Zach Greinke to a team like the Cubs that's in need of starting pitching and might be willing to spend and jettison some prospects in order to reload for the future? Do you think that's a move that they're going to be making this year?
Well, I mean, that's an easy thing to say, to move on and get some great prospects, but he's 33 years old. He'll have 4 years left on his contract after the season, and he's making a ton of money.
Tons.
Are the Diamondbacks going to eat some of that? You know, how much of that contract? They're not going to be able to trade the whole. They're not going to trade $180 million of a contract and get top prospects. That's not going to happen. He's 33, which means he's going to be signed until he's 37. You know, generally pitchers in this day and age don't translate. Their stuff doesn't translate that far. You know, his velocity is down a little bit. He's pitching better, but it's down almost a little over a mile. So that's an issue as well here. I think trying to see what you can get for him is a good idea. I think it was a bad contract at the time. I don't mind giving someone like Greinke a good contract, but not at his age. I think 6 years is sort of silly. You're going to eat it at the back end. You have to know that, unless you know he's the final piece of the puzzle. And Arizona should have known last year he was not that. So, yeah, I think trying to move him is a good idea. Just don't know without how much they're going to eat, what kind of prospects they think they're going to get back in return.
138.5 committed to him through 2021. And as George stated, he would be 37 years of age. He's going to be 34 here in October. So he's 33 for the rest of this season. Basically, his birthday happens when the calendar turns over to the next season. So you're right. I think it's going to be a kick the tires kind of situation, see exactly what they can get. But how could you possibly, you know, the Cubs are a nice, easy landing place. It's easy to talk about now, but when you get to the negotiation table, how could you possibly say that Greinke is a guy that will be, you know, easy to trade, so to speak. So in any event, I just thought it was an interesting discussion point. And I just wonder if it's how real it is for this season, or if it becomes a discussion as we move into the off season and into next season.
Yeah, I think it's, as I said, the Cubs make some sense because they are, Arietta's a free agent, so they're going to lose him. So they're going to be looking for starting pitching. And really, the weakness of that team is probably starting pitching anyway. They don't. Lester's really good, but not great. Arrieta is really, looks like he's taking a step back. Hendricks hasn't gotten it done this year. So it's, the Cubs are a team that I think would look for starting pitching and certainly could afford Greinke. But I don't know how anxious they're going to be to pay that much money to a 34-year-old pitcher.
Do you think Arrieta's market is going to be soft? I mean, let's assume he doesn't pitch to a 5.3 ERA. He brings it down somewhat. Do you think his market will be kind of soft, or is it dependent really how he hammers home this season?
I think it depends on how he hammers home this season. He's not pitching all that great right now. Once again, not terrible, you know, but he's got a 5.35 ERA, 1.47 whip. Those are concerning. His average fastball velocity is down almost 2 miles an hour, Mike.
That's brutal.
That's a lot. That's not good. That sort of signifies something's wrong here. He's 31, not quite as old as Greinke, but he's not, you know, he's not 25 either. So there are some issues here. Is it mechanical problems? Generally, when your velocity is down that far, it means either you're doing something mechanically wrong or there's an injury somewhere. Red flags are definitely raised here.
Yeah. So, okay. So good stuff there. Just something to keep in mind as we talk about some high profile pitchers and the market for them. So talking about today's games, looking at a couple of pitching matchups, I'm going to go to DraftKings first so you have an idea of what we're looking at with DFS. Highest priced pitcher on the board, Jacob DeGrom today, George, pitching at Milwaukee.
It is a hitter's ballpark there, so that scares me a little bit, but DeGrom's been great. I mean, really, he's holding the Mets together. Especially that pitching staff, which is duct tape and glue right now that's working for the Mets pitching staff. DeGrom's been fantastic. He is somebody I would consider starting here. But for the amount of money, I think I'm going to go in a different direction only because I don't like the ballpark he's pitching in. And I don't like the way the Mets are playing. I'm not so sure I'm going to get a win here.
Yeah, and I should have transitioned right to Arrieta because he is actually throwing today at St. Louis. He's the second highest priced pitcher on the board, right below DeGrom. I don't think I'm looking that direction either against the Cardinals lineup, who it's been pretty banged up. You got a couple of guys hitting fairly well in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, Cardinals playing well better all of a sudden. Cubs are not. I mean, I think part of the reason why Madden exploded yesterday is because of how poorly the Cubs have played of late. You know, nothing's really going their way. I think he's a little bit tired of being mediocre coming off a World Series championship. Once again, though, am I going to start Arrieta? Probably not. Probably going to stay away from this game altogether.
Yeah, so you got a few other guys here. Gio Gonzalez pitching against the Phillies. Jose Quintana facing the Padres. Kevin Gausman going against the Royals. And Luis Severino, we talked about earlier today, he faces off against Houston. I don't love that. I mean, I like Severino at home, but I don't really love that. Too many bats in there that I think can get to Severino, who is pitched, we all agree he's pitched well, but it doesn't mean he smoothed everything out regarding his ability to pitch well. So
those
are a few of the high
about-
guys.
You know, I always worry about in double headers. It has nothing to do with the Yankees. In double headers, you got to make sure who's starting which games. For all you know, Severino gets the short end of the stick, and the Yankees go with the three backups playing in that game. You know, all of a sudden, you know, so you have to worry about that as well. Maybe all the regulars are going to play tonight. You know,
I think
Derek
so.
Tonight, yeah. They want to win those games, so you have to worry about that. Or they're just going to split it up, and both, you know, neither Tanaka or Severino gets a full lineup tonight. So that's always going to concern me.
Yeah, I would imagine. They'll have the high-profile lineup tonight for the nationally televised game, but you know, Girardi might just see a different way. I mean, he's not going to listen to that, but you know how the Yankees are. They'll play to the crowd a little bit, so I wouldn't be surprised to see the A lineup out there tonight and some backups in there today.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to work out as well.
So Kevin Gausman going against the Royals. You got Aaron Sanchez facing the Mariners. As we go down through Drew Pomeranz, Jeremy Hellickson, your boy Trevor Bauer that you wrote about in the article going up against the Twins today. Hector Santiago going up against the Indians. Adam Wainwright, R.A. Dickey, Mike Fiers going up against the Yankees today. Any of these options, as we keep dropping down, any of these options stand out to you as somebody you might want to use today? Kevin Gausman against the Royals?
That's the guy I was looking at there. I mean, I know Gausman's had some problems this year, but it's the Royals. Royals can't hit. I mean, they just can't do it. Gausman's someone I'm almost certainly starting today for $8,600 on DraftKings. Aaron Sanchez, ordinarily, Seattle's pretty banged up too. Their rotation, I think they're down 4 starters. I mean, they're getting crushed there in their rotation. So he's someone I ordinarily might look at, Mike, but coming off injury, I don't like to start guys coming off injury there. Nobody else truly stands out to me. You know, I mean, by the way, I think Washington Philadelphia is another doubleheader you got to watch out for today to see who's which lineup you got to worry about.
By the way, Gio Gonzalez, Max Scherzer going today for the Nats. So a lot on the line for fantasy purposes, pitching for the Nationals.
All right. Well, with us, what we're looking at here, though, only Gio Gonzalez is available, not Max Scherzer, or else Max probably would almost be a definite. So I think Max, if you are, is 13,600 if you are doing
on
an
the
afternoon
late
slate. Right. Yeah. So he was someone I would certainly look at there. So far, that's why Gosman's always a definite start for me. I like him for 8,600, and I'm probably going to end up paying for DeGrom because I will play today. So I'll probably pay for DeGrom because there's just no one else I like. I might as well take the best pitcher on the board.
Yeah, understandable. How about anybody you're looking to attack, guys that you think are in a really tough matchup today? We're never in love with Drew Pomeranz, but it is a home game. You know, a few other guys out there. I'm looking at actually AJ Griffin. That's a little bit later for the Rangers. Senzatela pitching for the Rockies against Urias. That's actually a pretty good matchup. Urias pitched well last time out for the Dodgers. Senzatela's pitched very well for the Rockies, 5-1 on the season. You know, somebody tonight, I'm just looking at the full slate right now, somebody tonight, Jeff Samardzija, who's been brutal, 0-5 on the season going up against the Reds.
Yeah, I think I'll attack. You hit that at one side. I would take the other side. I might take some Boston Red Sox players going up against Matt Andres in Tampa Bay. I don't think I'd mind attacking that at all in Fenway Park. I think that's something you could look at there. Other games I might look at, you said Colorado. That's unautomatic almost, right? We have to look at that. As much as I like Milwaukee, they can hit his ballpark. Neil Walker, he owns Milwaukee. Of that ballpark. I might want to look at Neil Walker today to put him in there again in that lineup. No one else truly stands out. I'm not going to. Mike Fears for Houston. I mean, he's someone you can pick on, but I don't know who's playing for the Yankees in the 2 o'clock game. That lineup is not quite out yet. At least it wasn't the last I checked. Ariel Miranda. Maybe while Jose Bautista is about as hot as you're going to get right now, he looks locked in. He might be somebody you want to look at too. And just about anybody on the Chicago White Sox. And that's Jared Weaver, once again, pitching for San Diego.
We've got Tony Sincotta here for 1 minute. Tony, happy Mother's Day to you and yours. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to talk DFS. Who's somebody that you have to have in the lineup today, and who's somebody you're looking to attack?
You know, one of the things that I'm looking from a pitching standpoint, I think Justin Verlander versus the Angels is automatic. That Angels offense has been absolutely brutal, and Verlander's had the strikeout numbers. So he is certainly a guy that I'm looking at from a pitching standpoint. I know you mentioned Max Scherzer. He's absolutely in play today. And Pomeranz versus the Tampa Rays. The Rays strike out second most in the American League right now. And from it's so bad. All Dodgers today. They're going to attack Senzatela. He did it in Colorado. His ERA is under 3, but people are going to throw Dodgers out there today and see if the young kid can do it again.
All right, good stuff. You're coming up, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, you and Cha-Cha on this Mother's Day. I know it's going to be interesting. George and I will be back to wrap it up in a couple of minutes. Back for the final segment of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Tony Sincotta has joined us here for the last couple of minutes as we pass it over to Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Tony, you mentioned something during the break. You said there's going to be a lot of rain all around the country today, so it's something to keep in mind when setting your lineups, yes?
Yeah, that's a problem the last couple of days. Sometimes it ruins the enjoyment of DFS baseball. You got to sit here and play amateur weatherman. So you're going to have some of that today. Of course, the Yankees game and Astros at the 2 o'clock game. There's a 50% chance of rain at 3 to 6 o'clock. The Boston Red Sox, 80% chance of rain from 2 o'clock on in that contest. So it's the upper northeast again where we get some problems.
Yeah, like George said earlier, Tony,
would take a monsoon for the Yankees to delay that game. Either that game gets canceled or they're playing through. Noah could be building an arc in center field, Tony. They're not delaying that game.
You know, let me tell you something about the Yankees. This is the most disorganized franchise in the history of the world. And they got this kid that retires that's one of the greatest players of all time, Derek Jeter, according to them. And they put his ceremony on Mother's Day. So basically, guys have to say, hey, you know what? We got to clean this up by 4. I got to get to Yankee Stadium. What the hell is wrong with them? They had the whole year. They had to do it today?
Yeah.
My guess is Jeter wanted it that. I don't know this for sure. He wasn't wanted on Mother's Day.
Well, that tells you know. I think less and less of this guy is being the most overrated person. I'm not even talking about his play. As person, Derek Jeter is the greatest. Derek Jeter went to Fenway Park where all these Yankees came up and bought all the tickets, and they drove all the way up there, and he didn't play in any of the three games in Fenway Park. Now he has to have it on Mother's Day because he only cares about himself and his mother and doesn't care about every other guy that he's putting in Fathom's way. Now, this guy ain't the greatest guy in the world. He's
no
Tim
Tebow.
You
really hold that against him for not ending his career at Yankee Stadium? Do you think that's a
all those bar? Yankees fans were there? It was a huge, huge problem. Yeah, Ted Williams would play.
Yeah, but all right. But do you have a huge issue with LeBron sitting out? You know, 15 games a year or whatever else does in the NBA.
I have a big problem. I have a big problem with the NBA. You know why the LeBron James thing is sick? Because LeBron James actually leads the league in minutes played per game.
I agree.
So why then cut him out 8 minutes a game? What the hell do you keep throwing him out? If it doesn't matter the regular season, which you guys proved it doesn't matter, why is he playing 38 minutes a game?
I totally agree with you. His workload is far too great especially for the type of player he is. I was going to ask you what your favorite Derek Jeter moment is, but this doesn't seem like the best timing.
His retirement.
Yeah, it's a Jason Giambi play where he was out of position and he flipped that ball to home plate. Yeah, how the hell did he ever beat that play? I mean, that's
you gotta
they practice that in spring training. Sure they do. Yeah, I've seen that so many times.
It's Jeremy, and the only reason I'm correcting you is because that he's known for. It's the only thing he's known for. Jason is known for some other things.
Yes, if we take that away from him, where is his life gone?
Well, happy Mother's Day to you and yours. What do you got going on today?
I got fantasy bagels and baseball, and then the kids and their mom are going out. And I'm probably going to enjoy Mother's Day more than I have in the past. I'm going to have a steak, and I'm going to watch golf.
Oh, there you go. It's a little DFS golf, the Players Championship ongoing.
Yeah, Good.
Who's in the lead there right now?
Oh, now it's they got some guy, Chris Stanley, that I've never heard of before, and he's absolutely getting it done. And J.B. Holmes, who's a big hitter, who's got a shaggy beard, and he looks like a guy at the bar that would drink beer with you all day long as you're buying.
Yeah, he's a big member of the
Riders. What kind of steak
you having? Yeah, there you go.
Oh, probably a New York strip steak in honor of Derek Jeter. That's my contribution today. Nice. I'll have a New York strip steak for Derek Jeter.
It's a perfect way to close it out. J.B.
Holmes,
should
have two.
Big hitter. Yeah, there you go. Damn, we have two today for the doubleheader. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to my mom. Happy Mother's Day to my sister. Happy Mother's Day to my wife, who makes all of this possible. You'd be surprised how much our wives and families have to support us to do this stuff. So love her and appreciate it. All of you out there, thanks for listening. Enjoy fantasy bagels and baseball next, and enjoy your Mother's Day. Talk to you next week, folks.